堂听 class.com。
Now let us begin part A with question number one. Question number one.
She used to live in the dormitory, but now she has her own apartment.
Question number two.
We'll probably be late for the concert, won't we?
Question number three.
I'd better not go to bed because I haven't finished my chemistry assignment.
Question number four.
I always forget people's names at parties.
Question number five.
You gave me the right address for Bill's apartment, didn't you?Question number seven.
The snack bar has fresh fruit, right?
Question number eight.
There are big sales going on in the department store downtown this week, according to Charles.
Question number nine.There's not a single cloud in the sky this afternoon. Question number 10.
Not one student in my class has studied reading before.
Question number 11. Behind the lecture hall is a small parking lot.Number 12. Lucy was offered a scholarship by the university that was her first choice. Question number 13.
Barbara discovered she was ineligible for the summer contest.
Question number 14. Ted once worked there, but no longer does.Number 15. She replaced the broken pane of glass. Question number 16.
I guessed the right answer.
Question number 17.
I promised to take Kathy some of this delicious soup.
Number 18.
Marianne, that's who makes the best food.
Question number 19. The last person I want to see is Jess. Question number 20. Sarah used to teach psychology, but now she's a corporate statistician.This is the end of part A. Now let us begin part B with question number 21. Question number 21.
Could you tell me something about the apartment you're renting?
Well, it's $285 a month, including heat. What does the woman want to do? Question number 22.
The planetarium's new show on space stations is pretty interesting.
Pretty interesting? I can spend hours there. What does the man say about the show? Question number 23.
Did you hear that Brad got a job in his uncle's law office?
Like they say, it's who you know that counts. What does the man mean?Question number 24.
I think I've got this experiment set up right now.
You only think it's right? In chemistry, you've got to be sure.
What is the woman's suggestion to the man? Question number 25. Is your roommate looking forward to going home for the summer?
She's counting the days.
What can be inferred about the woman's roommate? Question number 26.
I thought I'd take the half day tour of the city.
Why not the whole day? What does the man suggest the woman do? Number 27.
You look tired. Can I help you with those boxes?
Thanks, but they weigh a ton each. What is the man implying? Question number 28. I think I'll get a couple of tickets to the play.
But don't just sit anywhere. You should get tickets in the orchestra section.
What does the woman suggest? Number 29. Do you want me to take the book back for you?
When you have a chance.
What will the man probably do? Question number 30. I've been taking four courses, but I think I'll drop one of them at the end of this term.
That may be for the best.
What does the woman mean? Number 31.
How much are those blue plates and bowls?
$10 for a four-piece plate set. What does the woman want to buy? Question number 32.
Judy earned a lot of money over the summer as a consultant for that agency.
I don't doubt it. What surprises me is that she's still working there now that classes have started again. What does the man say about Judy? Number 33. Rita can certainly play the piano well.
Oh, you have heard her play.
What has the woman assumed about the man? Question number 34.
You're not much of a rock and roll fan, are you?
It's far from being my favorite kind of music, that's for sure. What does the man imply? Question number 35.
Would you mind if we discussed tomorrow's agenda before dinner this evening?
Not at all. I certainly don't want to talk about it during our meal. When will they probably discuss the agenda? This is the end of part B. Now let us begin part C with question number 36. Questions 36 through 40. Listen to the conversation.
Hey, Joe, what's all this talk about a benefit walk-a-thon this weekend?
Don't you know? Most of the residents in Packer Hall are going to try to walk the 7 miles from the engineering library across campus and down to City Hall in an effort to raise money for the new children's hospital.
Sounds like a good idea, but I don't understand where the money comes from.
Well, a few days before the walk-a-thon, each participant goes around asking people to pledge a certain amount of money for each mile that he or she expects to walk in the event. Then, after the walk-a-thon's over, the participants go back to those same people, collect the money pledged, and send it into the hospital.
So you mean if someone pledges, say, $1 a mile, and you walk 5 miles, you get $5?
That's right. Of course, most of my friends aren't such big spenders. The biggest pledge I've gotten so far is 25 cents a mile.
And how many people have made pledges for you?
11 so far. Hey, how about making it an even dozen?
Sure, if you'll do the same for me. The walk-a-thon sounds like the perfect opportunity for me to break in my new pair of sports shoes.
Question number 36. Question number 39. What will happen to the money raised at the Walker Fountain? Question number 40. How much money has each of Jerry's friends pledged to him? Questions 41 through 46. Listen to the conversation.
Lucille, I've been admiring that sculpture you have on your desk. It looks like a polar bear. That's right, it is a polar bear. It was made out of soapstone by an Inuit artist from northern Canada. The dark gray stone is easy to carve, and lines, which look almost white in contrast, can be made with hand tools.
I've seen other Inuit sculptures made from whalebone and wood. You can see by looking at this bear that the style seems quite abstract. And yet, there's a realistic impression of the bear's shape and strength.
Inuit sculptors usually do depict animals in just such a style. Their favorite subjects are the animals of northern Canada and Alaska, like polar bears, seals, caribou, and bears. The Inuit hunt some of these animals for food.
Yes, I know, but the polar bear is their favorite because of its size, strength, and agility.
That's true. They recognize it as one of the most graceful swimmers and fishers of all animals. And most important, the polar bear symbolizes all the skills the Inuit hunters expect of themselves for survival.
Question number 41. Where does this conversation probably take place? Question number 42. According to the conversation, in what part of Canada does the artist live? Question number 43. What kind of art object are the people looking at? Question number 44. How does the man describe the appearance of the object being discussed? Question number 45. Which animal do the Inuit people admire most? Question number 46. What does the Inuit's favorite animal symbolize to them? Questions 47 through 50. Listen to the lecture.
Today, I would like to talk about the early days of movie making in the late 19th and early 20th centuries. Before the pioneering films of D.W. Griffith, filmmakers were limited by several misguided conventions of the era. According to one, the camera was always fixed at a viewpoint corresponding to that of the spectator in a theater, a position now known as the long shot. It was another convention that the position of the camera never changed in the middle of a scene. In last week's film, we saw how Griffith ignored both these limiting conventions and brought the camera closer to the actor. This shot, now known as a full shot, was considered revolutionary at the time. The Love of Gold was the name of the film in which we saw the first use of the full shot. After progressing from the long shot to the full shot, the next logical step for Griffith was to bring in the camera still closer, in what is now called the close-up. The close-up had been used before, though only rarely, and merely as a visual stunt. As, for example, in Edwin S. Porter's The Great Train Robbery, which was made in 1903. But not until 1908, in Griffith's movie called After Many Years, was the dramatic potential of the close-up first exploited. In the scene from After Many Years that we're about to see, pay special attention to the close-up of Annie Lee's worried face as she awaits her husband's return. In 1908, this close-up shocked everyone in the Biograph studio. But Griffith had no time for argument. He had another surprise, even more radical to offer. Immediately following the close-up of Annie, she inserted a picture of the object of her box, her husband, cast away on a desert island. This cutting from one scene to another, without finishing either of them, brought a torrent of criticism on the experiment.
Question number 47. What kind of motion picture camera shots were generally used in early films? Question number 48. What occupation did Edwin S. Porter
when was After Many Years produced? Question number 50. Why was the close-up of Annie Lee followed by a shot of Annie Hudson? Stop work on section 1. End of recording.
Was a wonderful experience. Did you organize all these files?
No, I got Friday to do that. What happened in the files? What's your liberty score?
Do you ever get as much as a foot of snow here?
Hardly ever. What did the man mean?
I was hoping we both would be in the discussion class.
Me too, Amy. But by the time I got to registration, the course was closed. What did the man mean? This is the end of part D. Questions 36 through 40. Listen to the conversation between two acquaintances. You must be pretty excited about your trip to Europe. When is it, cheerleading?
In just 3 weeks. I am excited. But there are still a few things I need to do before I go.
Like what?
Like renewing my passport and going to the travel agency to buy my plane ticket and figuring out what to do with my apartment while I'm gone.
You're not going to give it up, are you?
No way. I'll never find another apartment around here. But I don't like the idea of paying 3 months' rent on an empty apartment either.
I don't blame you. Perhaps you could shop later.
Yes, but who cares?
Oh, I know just the question. An old colleague of mine, Jim Thomas, is coming here to do some research this summer, from June through August.
Well, that's exactly when I'll be away. It sounds ideal, as long as the land is green.
Tell you what, I'll be calling Jim later this week anyway, so I'll mention it to him.
Well, thanks, Bill. Let me know what happens. That extra money would really come in handy.
Question number 36. What does the woman need to do with the travel agency? Question number 37. Why doesn't the woman want to give up her apartment entirely? Question number 38. How long will the woman be in Europe? How does the man know Jim Thomas? Question number 40. What will the woman most likely do about her apartment? Questions 41 through 45. Listen to the professor tell his class how to avoid plagiarism. Your assignment this term will be to write two major research papers. One of the most important things about writing a research paper is giving proper credit to the sources of information. Failure to do this is called plagiarism, which is a form of intellectual dishonesty. Plagiarism is a kind of stealing, or at least an unauthorized borrowing of someone else's ideas. Sometimes inexperienced students will plagiarize unintentionally, and then be surprised when the teacher won't accept their papers, or gives them a failing grade. The best way to avoid unintentional plagiarizing is to be very careful in gathering your information. As you take notes on books or magazine articles about the topic you should read, first, try to assimilate the information thoroughly. Secondly, write it down in your own words. This is called paraphrasing. If you do a good job of paraphrasing, you'll capture the main idea